A large cross dominates a village on a forested mountaintop which is shrouded in cloud. Peter Ustinov, Tony Curtis, in Agatha Christie's Murder in Three Acts. Through wispy clouds, the village overlooks a coastal resort. Starring Emma Sams, Jonathan Cecil, also starring in alphabetical order, Fernando Allende, Pedro Armendariz, Lisa Eichhorn. Sun beats down on the resort. A paraglider takes off from a beach of golden sand. A man dives from a cliff into azure blue water. Sailing boats and motorboats bob about on the sea. Dana Elkar, Francis Lee McCain, Marion Mercer, Diana Muldaur, Nicholas Pryor, Conchetta Tomei. Behind the skyscrapers which fringe the coast is a dual carriageway divided by palm trees, and beyond, residential areas set amid undulating wooded slopes. Gawky-looking Hastings, who wears a straw hat and drives an open-topped car along the road, heads for Acapulco Airport. Inside, he finds Poirot, who's smartly dressed in a suit and Panama hat. Poirot impatiently rolls back and forth on the balls of his feet. Based on the novel by Agatha Christie, directed by Gary Nelson.
Poirot! Poirot! Hello! Ah, Poirot! Welcome to Acapulco!
What's happened to you? You've gone native, have you? Are you a beachcomber, perhaps?
Oh, well, when in Rome, you know. I mean, no point looking like a tourist, is there?
No.
Hastings picks up Poirot's bags.
Poirot? No. So, what's all this about your writing your memoirs, then?
Yes, it's true, I'm afraid. Yes, I was made an offer which I could not refuse. But I must say, it fills me with dread that Hercule Poirot is at last to be revealing all, well, almost all, to his adoring public. This is your car?
Yes, nifty little bus, isn't she?
You're sure it is a car? It looks like some sort of kitchen appliance. Women should beat their laundry against that.
Have you thought of a title yet?
I haven't even started writing it yet.
I know, but knowing you, I'm sure you've got some excellent ideas.
Well, the publisher came up with My Life in Crime by Hercule Poirot.
My Life in Crime, that's jolly good. Rather clever, isn't it? Yes, it could even be My Lifetime in Crime.
I don't suppose you're going to mention that silly little episode in Normandy, are you? You know, the enormous French woman.
A pig crosses the road.
Oh, the enormous woman in North, can't I remember?
Yes, well, it's not that funny. I mean, think of my family. I mean, they've got to read this book of yours.
Well, think of my reputation. Writing your memoirs is not a joke, you know, the truth must be respected at all time. That is, unless...
Unless what?
Unless you get me out of this stupid house party. Oh. Take me to a hotel, forget about me. You know, I hate these things.
Yes, but you're going to thank me this time.
You always say that. Remember the last time? What happened? The fireworks? The dead trombone player?
Yes, but this place is absolutely magnificent. Frankly, nice bunch of Americans, too. They live here most of the year round.
Oh, is this insane enthusiasm? And the result is always the contrary.
A car crosses their path.
Good Lord! What the blazes do you think you're playing?
Hastings, are you all right?
Oh, yes, fine. Absolutely fine. Oh, excuse me. May I introduce Hercule Poirot? This is Jennifer Eastman.
How do you do?
Enchanted.
You can call me Egg if you like. Everybody does.
Egg? What timing?
Excuse me? Oh, you mean the accident? I'm really sorry. I'm in a bit of a rush. You're going to Crow's Nest?
Yes, we are, as a matter of fact.
Oh, good. I'll see you tonight, then. Mr. Poirot, it was nice almost running into you. Oh, do you like that on or off?
On.
Oh, well, I'll see you later.
It's a rather hard-boiled little egg, if you ask me.
They travel on a coast road.
I'm in the Crow's Nest.
Oh, no. The Crow's Nest is where we're staying. Yes, it's Charles Cartwright's house.
Charles retired from show business to this place about a year ago.
The Crow's Nest is a luxurious house along the top of a rocky promontory.
Good afternoon, Miss Milray. May I introduce Hercule Poirot? Miss Milray, Charles's secretary.
Charles' assistant.
Oh, yes, of course. Sorry.
I'm enchanted, madame.
Mademoiselle. Miguel will show you to your rooms.
She goes.
She's rather touchy, old man. Not to worry.
You speak English? Oh, well, all right.
After you, old man.
Miguel merely stares and carries Poirot's bags. Hastings gives way to Poirot, and they walk across a terrace overlooking a leafy garden where a couple stand looking out to the ocean below.
Who are those people?
Well, the man's Dr. Wallace Strange. He's an American neurologist. He's rather famous, and he runs a sanatorium in the country near here. And the woman next to him, well, that's Angela Stafford. You recognize her, of course.
No.
Oh, come off it, Poirot. I mean, even I know that Angela Stafford, the American actress, has been a leading light on Broadway for 20 years.
Well, I've not been entirely inactive during that time, you know. I do not need Broadway for my dramas. Who's that woman in long trousers there?
Oh, that's Miss Janet Criss, the playwright.
Oh.
Yeah. No, you weren't listening. No, the thing is, it's a nom de plume, you see.
I'm pulling your leg. I know. Ah. I was nom de plume.
Oh, Miguel. Where's Senior Cartwright? Donde el Señor Cartwright?
Allá, señor.
Ah, oh, look, yes. Ahoy there, Captain Cartwright.
Charles Cartwright's on a yacht with
look
Egg.
Oh, this is great, great.
You're having too much fun again, Charles. You're acting like a 20-year-old.
I feel like a 20-year-old. It must be those vitamins that Milray's been giving me.
Or it's the company you're keeping.
Or maybe it's the company I'm keeping.
He hugs and kisses her.
Well, you know, it's an absolute mystery to me.
What's that?
Charles' adjustment to retired life. I thought for one that he would fight it tooth and nail.
Well, this isn't exactly Devil's Island, is it? I mean, he has seen to all the amenities.
Yes, but, you know, to give up a career in both film and the stage and then get rid of those wonderful places in both California and Paris.
And New York.
And New York. Now, there was a house. Did you ever see that one?
See it? I helped decorate it.
I'm sorry.
Charles and I were doing Private Lives on Broadway together at the time.
I forgot that you two were...
It's all right, Wally. It's easily forgotten.
By some people, perhaps. Who's that playing first mate?
Oh, that's Daisy Eastman's daughter. Egg, they call her. She'll be coming tonight.
There's your answer, Doctor. To the mystery of Charles Cartwright's successful retirement.
What, you mean that girl?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't think so. She's just a child.
So is Charles. But then you should know that better than anyone.
Hello!
Arthur, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And this
yes,
must
yes,
be
yes.
Cute.
Madam, I have admired your art for more than 20 years.
This is Janet Criss.
How do you do?
This is Dr. Strange.
Pleasure.
Wonderful work.
And, yes, out there, of course, our host, Charles Cartwright.
Oh, la la.
Look, they're waving at us.
Oh, yes.
Hello.
Oh, that's jolly nice.
Hello.
Charles and Egg wave back.
That's Wally up there, and standing next to him is Angela.
Angela Stafford?
Mm-hmm. She's nice. A lot of fun. You're going to like her. That's Hastings, and that's the great Perrault.
Oh, and what makes Perrault so great?
He happens to be the most famous detective in the world. Perrault!
I guess that means there won't be any exciting crimes around here this weekend. No knives in the back or anything like that?
Poirot examines a sword on the wall.
No. Just ruminating about this sword. It must have killed several people during battles. And here it is living out its retirement on the wall of a glamorous hall.
Appearances can be deceiving, Monsieur Poirot. If I'm not mistaken, that's a prop.
A prop?
Yes.
You mean the...
Yes. Charles brandished it in the Royal Dragoon, I believe.
The Royal Dragoon?
Well, the two writers huddling together. Did you know that Monsieur Poirot is a writer?
His memoirs, you mean? Yes, I've heard.
In order to be a writer, one must have written.
Absolutely. Well, Wally, will you look after the two writers while I mix us some drinks?
You also write for the cinema?
No, only for the theater. Oh. I'm a bit of a snob, I suppose. I write satires. Brittle little comedies, that sort of thing. But I must confess that I've always had a particular fondness for murder. Oh, good. There you are. That egg girl called while you were dressing. She wanted to know if she could bring someone else.
Did she say who?
No, she didn't.
Charles, who's handsome with silver-white hair and wears a brocade smoking jacket, glowers. Egg arrives in her 50s white convertible with a man and woman.
Excuse me.
Charles goes to hug Egg and greet her guests. Angela watches and glares.
How are you?
Oh, that mother and daughter, they live in Acapulco?
Yeah, charming. Yes, yes, he used to be quite well off. Shipping, you know.
Shipping?
Ricardo, hello. How is your father?
Very well, thank you. He's in Washington these days.
Yes, well, give him my best wishes when you talk.
I certainly will.
Please come in.
Thank you.
Charles takes a drinks trolley from a maid. Pretty Egg notices Angela glaring at her and turns away.
I hope martinis are okay. I know you love martinis.
Somebody I want you to meet. This is Hercule Poirot, the famous detective I've been telling you about. This is my mother, Daisy.
It's not possible. Such a young mother. Oh, I'm delighted.
I'm delighted to meet you, especially after your brush with death today.
Brush with death?
But you egg in her car.
Oh, the car! Oh, the whole of my life flashed before my eyes.
Well, it was all Hastings' fault.
I say. Yes, it was, come to think of it. It was all your fault, Hastings.
Steady.
Who is the young gentleman?
Ricardo Montoya, Monsieur Poirot.
Ricardo?
Montoya.
Montoya.
Pleasure to meet you.
Yes, yes.
Be careful, Ricardo's a communist.
Freddie and Cynthia Dayton, the Reverend and Mrs. Babington.
Come on in, I'm making some drinks.
Oh, what a good idea.
This light. My dear, you look absolutely defined. Did you hear that, Cynthia?
Yes.
You've been holding out.
Poirot notices a displeased look the Reverend gives Ricardo.
Good to see you.
Oh, Egg, have you met Angela?
No, I don't believe I have. You're the actress, aren't you?
Yes, I'm the actress. How do you do?
Oh, and my orchids, Charles. You can't imagine how they're blooming. It's a miracle.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
What's all this about miracles? I thought that was my domain.
Oh, we're talking about orchids, dear.
My dear, the
family. She's lecturing you about manure again.
Always talking to me about manure. Bill Ray, take the tray.
He's all right, thank you very much. He's in Washington.
I certainly have the headlines going up and down.
No, Charles, you'll just have to wait for the fall collection.
You can have a drink, Mother, but just one.
Thank you, dear.
Not for me.
Charles, to you and your quaint little cottage here.
Charles! Right,
sir. Milray has served the drink from a silver tray. Charles turns to her.
Let me see if I've got this right. We're going to have grilled sole, pheasant under glass. We're having chipped potato and a chocolate souffle. How does that sound?
Excuse me.
The Reverend has fallen to the floor. The smartly dressed dinner guests look on as Wally squats, removes the Reverend's dog collar, and feels his throat for a pulse. Balding Wally looks up anxiously. Out in the night, the Reverend's covered body is put into an ambulance. Charles kisses Mrs. Babington.
I'm terribly sorry. See that you get your money.
Egg and Daisy steer Mrs. Babington away. Hastings watches with Poirot, who's nattily dressed in a pinstripe blazer.
I think, Poirot. Andy, you've been introduced to the poor chaplain.
No, it was very sudden.
Mr. Poirot, could we speak to you for a moment, please?
Yeah.
You too, Hastings.
Hmm? Oh, yes, of course, yes, yes.
This way, please.
Wally leads them into Charles in a plush room with white louvered shutter doors. Yes.
Thank you, gentlemen. Charles doesn't like it.
Reverend Babington's death, I mean.
Well, of course he doesn't. It's most distressing.
And painful, too, judging from the poor man's expression.
Wally, did you ever see a man die like that before?
No, I haven't. But as a nerve specialist, I haven't seen that many people die before. Dr. Vega has probably seen many more deaths than I have.
Vega?
The doctor who was here tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Wally, he wasn't here when the man died. He's just guessing what kind of a seizure it was.
What are you suggesting, Charles? Murder?
It's a possibility.
And how? With some new untraceable poison in a cocktail glass, perhaps?
Wally, it isn't funny. I mix those drinks myself. It is a possibility, isn't it, Carol?
Logically, I would say it is not a possibility. To kill an old man like that at a cocktail party, it would be extremely difficult, to say the least of
it.
Why? How would a murderer be sure that the old man would take that particular glass out of a row of identical glasses which were being passed at random on a tray? No, no. And the motive. What would the motive be to kill an innocent old clergyman like that? No. He was not secretly wealthy by any chance, was he?
Quite the contrary. I should imagine.
Excuse me, but wealth doesn't necessarily have to be a motive.
Oh.
Charles paces, then points to the tray of sparkling martini glasses.
You ought to have his glass analyzed.
Well, it's a little late for that, Charles. Miss Milray has obviously had the glasses washed.
Yes, she had them all washed. All except this one.
In Poirot's pocket.
I thought you said it wasn't murder. Murder.
Well, my logic tells me it's not murder, but my instinct keeps tapping me on the shoulder. I'm sure Charles knows what I mean. Yes, I don't see any harm in having the glass analysed. Meanwhile,
Poirot goes to the long row of sliding louvered shutters and looks through one.
I think we ought to agree to keep this secret for the time being. There's no point in alarming the killer, if there is one. And I should hate to have a wonderful house party like this spoiled by the fact that one of the guests is accused of murder.
Wally edgily taps a cigarette on a cigarette box. Day. Clear blue-green sea crashes up against a cliff face. Out on Charles's shady terrace, he and his guests breakfast at a table laden with exotic fruits. Miguel waits on. The guests turn when they hear a car. It's Egg driving Poirot and Hastings. She bumps to a halt. Charles gets up and goes to meet them at the top of some steps. The guests follow him.
Thoreau. Hi. Well, the cat's out of the bag. Milray told everybody about the missing glass. But what did the analysis show?
Yes, but what are the results, monsieur? Is there a murderer in our midst?
No, there's nothing unusual. There was nothing in the Reverend Babington's glass except gin and vermouth.
Of course there wasn't. It was absurd to think that there was. I think we can go now, Freddy. Miguel, fetch our bags.
Charles to Cynthia.
You know, the analysis and everything, that was my idea.
I thought it was a great idea. Well, I didn't.
Which one of us did you take for the murder, Monsieur Poirot?
There was no murder.
Well, what exactly were the doctor's findings?
Nothing untoward. Natural causes.
What about an autopsy?
Oh, come now, Eric. Really capture her imagination. Can't you talk her out of all this foolishness?
It was a possibility.
What? That one of us killed the old man? No. I simply don't agree.
Neither do I. Thank you for your hospitality, Charles. It certainly wasn't dull.
Yes. Ricardo, are you ready?
Yeah, but...
Charles, thank you for everything. Do come by. You have a chance. Yeah.
Goodbye, Daisy. Egg.
Adios, Charles.
Goodbye, Egg.
Egg, wearing a pretty calf-length dress and a hat, gazes at Charles but is dragged away by Ricardo. Charles watches them go dolefully. Poirot notices and walks up behind Charles.
So was I.
Foaming water surges around the rocks beneath the crow's nest. Charles, in white shirt and trousers and a waist-length black jacket, stands on a terrace looking out over the water. He takes a long slug from a brandy balloon. and stares ahead glumly. Angela, who's dressed in a flowing pink, purple and yellow robe with heavy gold jewellery, stares down at Charles from another level. In her 50s, with short strawberry blonde hair and thin, pointed features, she watches Charles, then heaves a sigh and turns away. Charles, carrying his glass and a bottle, walks from the terrace at the end of the promontory and back up the various manicured levels to the house.
Poirot, excuse me, your collar. Let me just turn it out. There.
All right, thank you.
Absolutely.
Charles joins them from outside.
Don't you guys look dapper?
I said you.
Thank you.
Are you not coming with us?
No, I don't think so. I'm going to beat a graceful retreat, as they say.
How do you mean?
I'm leaving here. I'm moving out.
What's this? Who's leaving?
I am. I'm going to abandon ship, as you said I would. I'm going to put the house up for sale.
Sell?
Yes, I'm going to sell it. I'm going to put up the place for sale. Anybody want to buy a house? Just check with Milway over there.
Don't you think you're being a bit hasty, Charles? I mean, just because somebody drops dead in your living room.
That had nothing to do with it. Well, maybe it does have something to do with it. I don't know. I just want to clear out. I want to cut my losses.
Charles, where are you going to run to this time?
Wally, I'm not running anywhere. I'm just getting out. Is that okay by you? Good night.
Good night.
They all stare after Charles, who walks back outside. They, Poirot, wearing a smart pale blue suit, bow tie and white Panama, walks slowly through a bustling street market, which is packed with food stalls. Poirot stops at a fruit stall where big fat strawberries are laid on a banana leaf in a wicker bowl. Poirot bends to smell the strawberries briefly, then slowly moves a hand towards them and is about to pinch one when Egg comes up and grabs his arm, inadvertently stopping him.
What's all this about Charles?
What was in my heart?
Well, is it true about Charles going away?
Haven't you heard? He's already gone.
Oh, where?
I don't
where
know. It was all very sudden, very dramatic.
It's that Angela Stafford, isn't it? It's got to be her.
No, never.
He liked me. I knew
I'm
he
sure
liked
still
me.
Does like.
He raises his hat to the fruit seller who's watching him.
He does like you. Of course he does.
Well, why has he gone away like this without saying anything?
He must have thought it was for the best.
Then it's Babington's murder. Of course. That's why he left. He's still upset about it.
Babington's death, perhaps, but I must remind you, mademoiselle, there is no murder.
Of course there is. I thought you were on our side.
Poirot is only on the side of one thing, and that is the truth. Oh, Hastings, my good native guide.
Poirot, we're cutting it awfully close, you know. Hello, Egg.
Good morning. You're going back to L.A. already?
Yes, the publisher beckons.
Right, memoirs.
Yes.
Listen, Charles has a house in L.A. It's in Bel Air, I think.
If I run into him, I'll tell him that you send your warmest regards.
Just tell him that I'm terribly disappointed. Or heartbroken. Maybe you should tell him I'm heartbroken.
Heartbroken, are you sure?
Yes.
All right, heartbroken it is. Come, it's in the date.
I'll get him back, you know. And I'll prove you wrong. It was murder.
She watches them drive off. Los Angeles, California, 2 weeks later, a wet day. Raindrops streak down windows. Inside a room, Poirot sits with his eyes closed, his glasses pushed up on his head, and the forefinger and middle finger of one hand to his lips. Before him are a typewriter and a word processor. He stares about dozily.
Poirot!
Hello, Mr. Poirot.
It's Egg. Oh, and Hastings is here too. Say hi.
Hola, amigo. How goes the book?
Tell him that the words are flowing from my pen.
He says the words are flowing from my pen.
Glad to hear it.
Have you run into Charles yet?
No, I'm afraid I've been too busy.
Well, when you do, tell him that something rather odd is going on around here. That's why we called. Hastings and I just ran into each other and discovered we've been invited to the same house party tonight by Dr. Strange. Everybody has, it seems.
What do you mean, everybody?
Everybody who was at Charles's party.
The Daytons, Angela Stafford, Janet Crisp, everybody, except you and Charles, and maybe Ricardo. The weird thing is, though, is that Dr. Strange won't say why.
Is it not for dinner?
Yes. But when I called him, he was being rather evasive. He said there was going to be a surprise or something like that, a revelation.
Well, perhaps somebody's going to jump out of a cake.
Don't you find this the least bit intriguing?
No, I'm sorry, I really don't.
Well, I do. It may be a chance to uncover a motive for Babington's murder.
There is no motive simply because there is no murder.
And now, if you will excuse me, I have a book to write.
I'm working so hard I can't even sleep anymore. It's terrible.
But...
Yes, and my kindest regards to our friend the Beachcomber. Goodbye.
Pudgy Poirot puts his glasses back on his head and settles back to sleep in his chair. Night in Acapulco. Egg drives Daisy and Hastings and pulls up at Wally's fortress-like house.
Buenas tardes.
Strange old place, isn't it?
Please. Oh, and don't start delving into everyone's past. There's nothing that spoils the appetite like a polite accusation of murder.
Yes, well, you nearly murdered me in that car.
Oh, Egg.
Buenas noches.
Well, come in. Egg, how are you? Daisy? Fashionably late as usual. Hastings?
How'd you do?
Oh, you know, it's too bad Mr. Poirot couldn't be here. Mm. How's the book coming?
Oh, wonderfully well, from what he says. The words, what did
flowing.
He say? Flowing from his pen, yes.
Flowing!
In Poirot's now dark room, the words, "What can a man say about 35 years of detective work?" show on a word processor screen. The cursor flashes. Poirot's now on a couch asleep. He twitches in his sleep. In Acapulco, the glitzily dressed guests are around Wally's lavish table. A butler pours wine, and maids are on duty.
Well, see who it is.
The beefy butler goes to the large wooden front door.
See?
I'm Ricardo Montoya.
Pase.
Handsome, dark-haired Ricardo ambles in, casually dressed in white shirt and trousers. Ricardo stands in the large hallway carrying his white jacket slung over his shoulder.
Montoya? Well, show him in.
Si,
si. Ricardo, but what's he doing here?
Didn't you invite him, Egg?
No.
Oh.
I did not. No, I...
Well, we'll see.
Hello, everyone.
Ricardo! Nice to see you.
I'm awfully sorry for barging in like this, but you see, I had a bit of an accident down the road from here.
Well, there is always room for one more. Rosa, another chair, please, for Mr. Montoya.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
An accident? What happened?
Nothing to worry about. It just smashed up the car, and I could again start it again.
Just cruising through the neighborhood, were you?
Yes, just cruising.
He's between Egg and Angela.
It's the sanatorium about Mrs. Rushbridger.
Mrs. Rushbridger? Huh? Well, that's quite a mouthful, Carlos. You're a talented fellow, a first-class butler. Isn't he, Rosa?
Pretty maid Rosa smiles weakly. Wally laughs and sips his drink.
Will you excuse me, please?
Wally gets up and slows as he reaches some stone steps. Grabbing his throat, he falls to the ground. Hastings and Ricardo dash to his aid, and Ricardo feels for a pulse. Hastings turns to the onlooking guests. They all stare down at Wally. Day, Poirot's asleep on his hotel sofa.
Oh, no. Alf, why do I put do not disturb?
Poirot sits up.
Are you all right?
Yes.
Then why didn't you answer the phone?
I unplugged it. I'm trying to ride.
Well, I thought you were dead. Thank you, officer. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Perrault.
You thought I was dead?
It's happened again. This time it's Wally. Wally's dead.
Was he murdered?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I'm flying down there immediately. Please, Perrault, I need you down there. Won't you come with me, please?
Poirot claps Charles on the back as if agreeing. Rows of small motorboats on a sunny beach in Acapulco. A black and white taxi pulls up outside Wally's stone house, where a red and white cop car is already parked. Poirot and Charles get out of the taxi and go into the house. Angela and Janet watch them through blinds in an upper room, then stare stony-faced at each other. Janet narrows her eyes in thought. Charles and Poirot pass through an archway into a room where a policeman is dusting for prints on a bottle. They enter a library where a man with dark hair and a moustache stands at a desk.
Gentlemen, I'm Colonel Mateo. It is an honor to meet you both. I have seen many of your films, Señor Cartwright.
Yes, yes.
And of course, the famous Hercule Poirot.
It's not the first time we meet, you know. The Managua affair?
Ah. What a memory. I was only a corporal then.
Yes, but like Napoleon, a very talented corporal.
Thank you. Oh, I must tell you something right now.
Please.
My wife and I think you were magnifico, North Atlantic.
Oh, thank
very,
you.
Very good.
Yes, yes, good. Good. Thank you very much.
They don't make movies like that anymore.
No, I guess they don't.
Did you see it?
Huh? Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
So, when is your next film?
There's not going to be one for a while.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Don't be sorry.
And especially to meet you under such circumstances.
Yeah, this is terrible. Terrible.
Were you a friend of Dr. Strange's?
Yes, he was my friend. What happened?
He was poisoned.
Poisoned?
By his, how do you say it? His butler.
Butler? No, that's not possible, sir. I mean, Roberto was with him for
years. Oh, no. Roberto's out on a vacation. This is a new man. In fact, he slipped away from us last night after we questioned him. I know how that seems, but we had three men posted.
Did he know that you suspected him?
We did not suspect of him until after we questioned him. Now we know he's a very clever butler. He always wore gloves. No fingerprints.
Lying on the fairy-lit deck of a luxurious motor cruiser, Charles and Edgar at a table.
It's really all I can tell you. It all happened so suddenly.
And what about Wally? Was he nervous, preoccupied, anything? I mean, irritable or...
No, not in the least. In fact, he was in very good spirits. He was even laughing and joking with the butler, that Carlos character.
Laughing and joking with the butler? That's hard for me to believe. When was that?
After Carlos told him there was a telephone call from the sanatorium. It was about a Mrs. Rush Bridger. I remember, because Wally was teasing him about mispronouncing the name. Then he said he was a good butler, or something like that.
Doesn't sound like Wally, you know? What was that name?
Mrs. Rush Bridger, I think.
Bridger.
We could go look her up.
He raises his glass to her and they chink glasses.
Just you and me?
Redhead Egg nods.
I think so.
She beams at him. Chickens scatter as Egg drives on a palm tree-lined country road and does a hairy overtaking maneuver.
Would you like me to drive?
No, I'm fine. So go on, you were telling me about the other possibility.
Well, this could be a long shot, but what if the Rush Bridger call was nothing more than just a code of some kind? I mean, what if Wally hired someone to look into the Babbing to death like a private investigator while everyone was spending the weekend at El Castillo?
You mean you were searching everybody's houses?
Well, the main suspect's house. He finds something, then he calls back with the agreed-upon message. Mrs. Rushbridger has arrived. The butler delivers it, and Wally breaks out in a grin. He's solved the murder. Huh? He's feeling great. He says to the butler, you're a great butler, or something like that. What do you think?
So why'd the butler disappear?
Yeah, why did the butler disappear? Well, maybe he's got something on him. I don't know. It was just a thought.
The police cars have left Wally's house. Poirot and Hastings traipse through the grounds after a uniformed old guard who lets them into the house.
Hello? Anyone here? The Earl have his supper, sir. Just like I said.
Are you sure this is all right with Colonel Mateo?
Of course. Thank you for your help so far. Buenas tardes, senor.
Poirot, I'm awfully sorry, but I still don't quite understand why we're going to the library. I mean, nobody went in there that night.
With the possible exception of the butler. He must have disappeared somewhere. After all, he's not a magician.
Yes, but in the library... Just a minute. The secret passage.
Have you ever known a secret passage that does not start in a library?
Well, now you come to mention it,
No, of course not. We'll start here, because the safe is nearly always behind a picture, and the secret passage is nearly always behind a book.
The pair of them proceed along the shelves, touching books and partly pulling them out. Hastings pulls on a small bust on a shelf, and a door swings open before Poirot, who looks shocked.
Hastings, what have you touched? What?
Good Lord! After you, Elmer.
Every time there's danger, your manners become impeccable.
Oh, thank you very much.
Poirot squeezes into a passage. Hastings follows and finds a lever.
I wonder what this is for.
He pulls the lever, closing the door.
Smoke.
Poirot tries the lever.
Look, it doesn't work. Come on, follow me. It's all we can do now. Hello?
Poirot shines a small torch as they proceed down damp stone steps.
Be careful here. There's a step.
Well, oh, I see what you mean.
I never thought I'd end my life as a cinema usher.
Pipes.
I hope there's nothing electrified here. It all looks absolutely...
The torch goes out.
Okay, right.
Poirot fiddles with the torch to try and make it work.
No, no, we'll have to go back.
Well, I second that. Oh, after you, old man.
Oh, so polite. So it was the same story with you.
I wonder if there are any rats here.
Poirot freezes, then turns to him.
One more word out of you, Hastings. Do you hear me? Not one word!
It's not my fault.
Who said it would be different this time? Such nice people, interesting people, American people. It was you! I'm never going to come out with you again. This is the last time. Do you want me
to... Light from the secret door.
I think there's someone coming.
No, there's someone. What a fool.
Hastings hides and motions to Poirot to take the other side of the passage. A female figure walks down the steps, unknowing. Poirot grabs her. In the library.
Carlos Morales, you are on your way to meet.
No. It was me, Nobio. My boyfriend.
Your boyfriend?
Yes. He worked just below here, at the cafe.
Oh, he is perhaps a waiter.
No, he worked in the bar.
Right. Take, dry your tears on that. That's right. And on the night of the murder, were you on your way to see him then?
I wanted to, but then I hear someone coming, so I went back to my room.
At what time was this?
Almost 10 o'clock.
Did you happen to see who it was?
No.
No.
But from the footsteps, I could tell it was a woman.
How?
Well, whoever it was, she's wearing very short heels, because they sound like a...
Poirot, Hastings, I thought you disappeared. I was just about to call the police.
They weren't here a minute ago. I looked.
Yeah, you're quite right. You're very observant, senor. Thank you very much.
Eric told me you might be here. I'd like to talk to you if I could.
Yes, well, now that you have found us out... Of course. For the moment, could you
oh,
sit
yes,
there
yes,
just
course,
for a
yes,
second?
Sir.
I just want to ask this young lady one more question. What was this famous butler like? I mean, did you have an opportunity to talk with him?
No, senor. He was very private. We only saw him when it was time to serve the dinner.
Well, thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
Thank you.
Oh, you better take this. It's it's very dark in there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gracias. Mm. Yes, thank you. Oh. Forgive me for...
Monsieur Poirot, I am sorry. I suppose I'm getting a bit frantic. But it's about Egg and all this murder business.
Yes?
You see, she sees it as a sort of lark. An escapade with Charles. But quite frankly, I'm worried.
About the escapade with Charles or about the murder?
Well, the murder, of course. You see, Egg is so frightfully impulsive that once she sets her mind on something, there's no stopping her. It's like a kink in her personality. She gets it from her father's side of the family, of course. Well, I'm afraid I'm partly to blame as well. Oh, I do try to be firm with her, but... Well, take today. Now, the first thing I know, she's rushing off to some sanatorium to see that patient. You know, that Miss...
Mrs. Rushbridge?
Yes, that's the one. Oh, and right now she's with that poor Mrs. Babington, awaiting the results of some sort of autopsy.
The exhumation, yes, of course.
Do you know what she said to me as she was rushing off this morning? And she wasn't teasing either. She said that she was thinking of coming back here and laying in wait because the killer always returns to the scene of the crime. Now, can you imagine?
Was she going to take some cheese and wine there? I'm sorry, I know, I shouldn't have said that. It's a joke.
Señor Poirot, a telephone call.
Oh, thank you. Poirot! I see,
tomorrow morning.
All right. We will be there, yes. Bye. That was Charles. Our suspicions are confirmed. The Reverend Babington was poisoned with benzotine.
Sun beats down on the white roofs of the Crow's Nest. In the terraced gardens which reach down to the point of the promontory, palm trees sway. Guests are assembled on a shady terrace where Olga the maid wheels a drinks tray to Poirot.
These are the same glasses that were used during the cocktail party.
Yes, they are.
And you, Miss Milray, were the last person to handle them. But of course, nobody could have tampered with Stephen Babington's drink. Nobody. Oh, except Mrs. Babington.
Mrs. Babington? What a terrible thought. You don't seriously think that she's the killer, do you?
No, I'm thinking aloud. If only Dr. Strange had been murdered first, then we might be onto something.
Why do you say that?
Because at least we would have a motive. Who in his right mind would kill an old gentleman like Stephen Babington? Whereas a doctor, that's quite different. A doctor has many professional secrets. He also has the capacity of putting people away, of isolating them if he deems that they are dangerous to themselves or to other people. No one can imagine a lot of reasons for killing a famous neurologist.
Wally still wouldn't have been the first victim in the case.
I should very much like to know the reason why.
He didn't drink cocktails. He couldn't stand them.
He couldn't stand cocktails.
Hastings takes notes. Case.
What are you writing? There's nothing to write about. This is so stupid.
Hastings tears up his notes.
It's so obvious to me that both these crimes are two halves of the same crime. In order to understand one part, one has to understand the other, and therefore... I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, what do we do now?
I'm open to any suggestion, mademoiselle.
Why don't we separate into little groups and ask some questions in a friendly way, of course. I mean, maybe some of us will turn up something.
Excuse me, but shouldn't that be left to the police?
Oh, come on, Mother. How often do we get a chance to solve a real crime? Remember, you're still a suspect yourself. I guess we all are.
Looks are exchanged. Poirot nods to Hastings to make a note. Poirot's eyes flit to Milray, who he's standing behind. She turns and looks at him.
You know, I could be fired for this.
Why? You have done nothing.
Well, that's exactly why I could be sacked. Listen, Poirot, if you're so certain that one of the guests is the murderer, why don't we round him up and question him one by one?
I can be certain of only one thing, my friend, and that is that there was no deliberate murder of the Reverend Babington. As for rounding them up, we can do that at a later date. Buenos tardos, senorito. This is Colonel Matteo. I'm Hercule Poirot. We telephoned you earlier?
Yes.
The nurse he speaks to lets them in through a secure door. They follow her down a bare corridor to a door with a panel which she slides aside, then steps back.
Mrs. Rushbridge.
An elderly lady with short grey hair sits on the floor, rocking from side to side and staring into space in the clean, neat room. Poirot watches her, then raises his eyebrows and turns away. Matteo has a look in the room.
Very rarely. It has been diagnosed as catatonic. That's a form of schizophrenia.
Yes. Was it you who telephoned Dr. Strange that night?
Yes, sir.
The next question may seem peculiar to you. Was there anything about what you said which might be construed as amusing?
Not at all.
Oh, one final question. Does anybody ever ask after Mrs. Rushbridge, apart from her family, I presume?
No, sir. No one.
Well, Charles and Mademoiselle Haig seem to have lost interest in their affair.
They sure have. They're off playing policemen with the rest of the suspects.
Yes, Colonel, we have stirred the pot. We shall soon know what comes to the surface.
The secure doors closed after them. In the Dayton's smart shop, women watch models parade. Egg pulls up outside with Daisy and Charles.
There she is. Go get her.
Oh, I don't know how I let you talk me into this.
Come on, Mother. All you gotta do is say you're thinking of updating my wardrobe. Then ask her about Babington.
Well, what about you? That Freddie Dayton is a bad character.
Oh, come on, Mother. We'll be at the yacht club. Go on.
Charles, wearing white shorts, socks, striped shirt and Panama, gets out of the car and salutes Daisy as she gets out. He gets back in.
He loves this, you know.
Yeah. Well, are you sure you want to go through with this?
If Freddie Dayton is as fond of women and drink as you say he is, no problem. Just don't let yourself be flattered by that Angela Stafford.
Egg drives off with him. Nearby, set back from the sea, palm trees surround a large swimming pool where people lie on sun loungers. Freddie drinks at the smart pool bar. He wears a tartan jacket and watches a shapely young woman pass by. A waiter approaches him.
There is a young lady here to see you, sir.
A young lady? But it couldn't be my lovely wife, could it?
Egg marches in wearing a long blue sundress.
Well, what a wonderful surprise.
I hope I'm not intruding.
No! Not at all. What can I do for you?
Charles recommended that I talk to you. It's about Mother. Well, not really. Actually, it's about me. You see, right now, Mother's in your shop, determined to buy me a whole new wardrobe. And she doesn't realize how... well, how tight things are financially. I've even been thinking about going to work myself.
No.
Yes. And, well, since fashion has always been an interest of mine.
Of course. Of course. Of course. Come in.
I was just about to order us a drink.
He steers her to a seat. Cynthia in the shop.
It's cut very simply. It's rather elegant.
Don't you think?
Yes, it is quite nice. God knows Egg could use some simplification. I suppose you've heard the latest about poor Richard Babington. The autopsy results, I mean.
Yes, I did.
You know him from before, didn't you?
No.
Well, I mean, you met him before. I think he mentioned it that night.
No, I never saw him before in my life. He must be thinking of someone else. I'm very grateful to him and poor Dr. Strange, though.
Really? Why?
Well, as long as the case remains unsolved, there's just half a chance I murdered them myself. So now I find all sorts of dreadful women coming in to order clothes from me, just for the sensation. It's silly, isn't it?
Reverence, one thing. Nobody murders reverence. A doctor, it's a different story.
Yeah, I guess it would be.
Got too much power, if you ask me. Lock a man up. Him through hell. Call it taking a cure? I'm not about to take that damn cure. I don't care what my wife says.
I imagine she can be very insistent.
I would love to know what goes on in that precious sanatorium of his. But that's what they want.
Dr. Strange and your wife?
And others. Others are watching me too, like that rabbit-faced woman. One who writes the plays. Want to tell me what she was doing in my room the night of...
The night of the murder?
Found her poking around. Looks more like a weasel.
Did you tell the police?
The police? That's all I need.
Did you tell anybody?
Freddy gapes at her.
What is it? What's wrong?
Somebody put you up to this, didn't they?
No.
Was it my lovely wife?
No, I just wanted to talk to you myself.
How poor you are, yeah. Well, you're good. You're very good. You studied with a master, didn't you? Charles Cartwright, man of a thousand faces.
Freddy drains his cocktail and raises his hand for another. In an apartment in a swish block overlooking the beach, Charles talks with Angela on the balcony.
Do you mean to say that you actually drew up a list with our names on it? Charles, you have gotten carried away again.
This is important to me. Wally was our friend. Isn't there anything you can tell me that maybe you noticed?
Not that I haven't already told the police.
What about this Carlos character?
I don't know. I hardly noticed him. I mean, he just sort of blends into the wall, if you know what I mean. How about that other guy, that Montoya? Now, he made an unexpected entrance. A new method of gate crashing, you could call it.
Excuse me, ma'am. You have another visitor.
Janet hurries in.
Good afternoon, my dear.
Charles?
Charles.
Janet and I are putting on one of her plays, Two-Way Traffic. You remember?
Yes, I do.
We're putting it on for all the big wigs at the consulate. It should be lots of fun.
Excellent.
I hope I'm not interrupting anything.
Oh, don't be silly.
Does it look like it?
Charles is here in the role of a detective. This way, Charles can kill two birds with one stone. A rather unfortunate choice of words, isn't it? Would you like some coffee? Why don't you pour us some?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. We were just talking about that dreadful night at El Castillo.
Maybe you noticed something.
About what?
About the murder.
I'm afraid not.
Oh, don't be so secretive, Jan. I know what she's going to do. She's going to expose all of us in a book about the case.
Well, are there any revelations of any kind that we should see?
Forgive me. I guess
you didn't like the coffee.
Now, don't be funny, Charles. No, we're all edgy about this. It could have happened anyway. You all right?
Yes, I'm fine.
I, for one, think that it's time that we got everything out into the open. I mean, we should all get back together again, including that Hercule Poirot.
He apparently had the same idea. I just spoke with him.
And?
Well, he saw the ad for the play and decided to have a little party for us at his hotel this afternoon. Everyone's invited, he said.
Way outside Poirot's smart skyscraper block hotel. The guests have gathered in his suite.
I wish to toast Madame Stafford and Miss Crisp, who have collaborated in a wonderful play, which I'm sure will be an enormous success, and to which we will flock in our droves. The play.
The play.
The play.
Only Hastings and Poirot drink. The guests stand or sit tensely.
Why don't you drink? Look, we have drunk and we are not dead, are we?
I think so.
Oh, no. There is nothing in here except some bubbles and the juice of the fruit. That's all. I guarantee that. You have the word of Hercule Poirot.
That's good enough for me.
Charles, I could trust you. I knew that.
You egg.
Thank you very much.
So, the play? Have you noticed how champagne dissolves all tensions?
Well, you can't really blame us, Monsieur Poirot. Not after the last two parties.
Yes. And now that we're all here, what's the real reason for this one? Come on, Mr. Poirot.
Ricardo goes to the phone and finds it's been cut.
Oh, you let this happen? You killed Charles!
It's right. It was I who killed Charles Cartwright. But you know, Miss Hague, there's a little trick I learnt in the Far East.
to kill people and to bring them straight back to life again.
Charles, that was a wonderful performance. Stand up now and take the applause. Charles?
Charles doesn't move. Poirot's eyes dart about uneasily.
Charles!
Hero!
Ah. Oh. You are a tricky customer.
You monster! Unforgivable!
Well, I don't think it was that bad. I mean...
No, don't blame him. It was my fault. I simply had to go through with this demonstration in order to prove one point, which I did. And that is that the human eye, in this case there are 10 of us, 20 human eyes, cannot look at two different things at the same time.
What does that mean?
Well, let us say that there had been poison in Charles's glass. When the police came to investigate the glass, would they find the poison in it? No, they would not, because that is not the glass that was in Charles's hand. This one is. And while you are all rushing towards Charles, worried about him, I had time to switch glasses without anybody noticing. Which proves it could be done. It is exactly what the murderer did on two occasions. The first time in the crow's nest, and the second time, of course, in El Castillo.
Charles follows Poirot as he paces.
Then you know who the murderer is.
No, not quite. But I do know that that murderer may strike again at any minute. So that I beg all of you, if you have any knowledge about either of the two murders in question, which you have not yet told me, please to come forward without delay. I beg this of you. And I'm being... utterly serious.
Poirot's eyes scan the assembled people.
No?
Excuse me. Hastings goes to the door. He takes an envelope from a woman.
Telegram for you, old man.
Forgive me.
Poirot removes the telegram from the unsealed envelope and reads it.
I must see you as quickly as possible. Stop. I have important information about the death of Dr. Strange. Signed, Margaret Rushbridger.
Margaret? M. I'm worried about M. That's what Wally said in his diary.
Yes, yes, you're quite right. Charles, I think you ought to go there and see her. Tell Colonel Matteo about this, and when you have done that... Go with Charles, if you will, to the sanatorium, Hastings. Thank you very much.
And what about you?
Me? No, I'm afraid I'm not going anywhere. The things are now of such complexity that my duty is to stay here and think.
The remaining guests stare at him gravely. Poirot, the ends of his greying moustache waxed, stares down in deep thought. Lanky Hastings drives handsome Charles. Hastings glances at Charles and they exchange smiles as they speed along a sunny country road. In his hotel room, Poirot carefully builds a house of cards. Poirot is about to stack another card on, but stops and looks exasperated when he hears a trolley outside. Janet comes out of a fire door on Poirot's floor, but hides her face when she sees people arrive in a lift. Egg and Ricardo get out of the lift and walk in the opposite direction. Janet, still holding her grey coat collar up to her face, peeps round the corner and watches them head along a smart corridor. Janet watches them knock on Poirot's door.
Oh. We gotta talk to you, Mr. Poirot. Ricardo's got a confession to make.
A confession? Please come in.
Poirot eyes Ricardo as they step inside.
Now, what is the nature of this confession?
It's not what you think, Monsieur Poirot. I'm not the killer. But Egg has convinced me to come forward with some other things.
Oh, well, I think Mademoiselle Egg is quite right. But why should I think that you are the killer?
Because of the way he turned up at El Castillo. But the truth is, Dr. Strange asked him to do just that.
Yes, he wrote that I should fake the accident and then come up to El Castillo. He said he couldn't put the reasons in writing, but that he would explain to me later.
And, of course, he did not explain to you later.
Well, he never had a chance.
He never had the chance. Have you got a copy of that letter?
Nope. He wrote that I should destroy it.
Oh, he wrote that you should...
There's more. Go on, Ricardo.
Well, right after I was questioned by Colonel Mateo, and that was around 10 o'clock.
Yes.
I went to pick up my coat. Miss Crisp was there. She was looking for a shawl or something like that.
Yes.
Anyway, I was putting on my jacket when something fell out of it.
Well, what fell out of it?
I didn't actually see it fall, you understand.
What was it?
She picked it up and handed it back to me. It was a newspaper cutting about benzotine and what a deadly poison it is.
She must have planted that clipping on Ricardo. Don't you remember what Freddie Davis said, how he caught her sneaking around the house that night? I'll bet she's the murderer.
But what motive would she have for killing the Reverend Buddington? She didn't even know him before the party. She didn't know Dr. Strange either. No.
Maybe she's psychotic. Huh? A man-hater. Ooh. Clever people are often crazy, aren't they?
Oh, dear, huh? Egg. Oh, excuse me.
Egg studies the house of cards.
No, not quite so fast, Hastings. What? Oh, no, no. Yes, no. An old man. Yeah, I see.
Egg finds he's using a Happy Families pack of cards.
I understand. Yes, I understand. I'll see you later. Thank you very much, Hastings. Bye. Mrs. Rushbridger has been killed.
No.
Yes.
How?
Early this morning, she received through the mail a box of chocolates. Liqueur filled, benzotine.
Did she have a chance to say anything?
No. I think it is probably because she said nothing that she was murdered.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
Neither do I. What about the telegram?
Oh, the telegram was delivered, according to Hastings, by a small boy who received it from an old groundsman at the sanatorium who saw it drop from a window enclosed in a 500 peso note, and the small boy was apparently allowed to keep the change on condition he delivered the telegram.
I'm afraid I still don't understand. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Poirot shakes his head and his features twitch. He goes to sit in front of the house of cards again. Egg sits beside him on the couch.
Play Happy Families while you're trying to solve the case. Mr. Poirot?
Oh, you know, it's a hangover from my childhood. When I was very young, I started doing this in order to teach myself concentration, and I've never stopped the habit.
So what does Mr. Mugg have to say about
that? Mr. Mugg, the milkman, ding, ding. Yeah, well, I remember.
Charles Edward W. Muggins. That was his real name before he became an actor.
Charles's real name was Muggins. Really?
Probably looked like this, too. So, does he have any ideas?
Not that I know of, anyway.
Where does that leave us, Poirot?
Do you mind? I'm sorry to be so antisocial, but I really must concentrate as rarely before.
Poirot puts his steepled fingers to his lips and closes his eyes. Egg turns back.
I think it'll be safe to go to the play tomorrow night.
What?
Two-way traffic. We've all been invited to the dress rehearsal.
Where have you been invited?
The dress rehearsal.
The dress rehearsal?
What's wrong?
Have I been blind? The dress rehearsal.
His eyes narrow. At the crow's nest, a patch of lawn overlooking blue sea. A blue and white VW Beetle taxi speeds up to the house, and Poirot gets out of it.
Gracias.
Milray encounters Poirot as he climbs the steps to the house.
Oh, Miss Milray, good afternoon.
I'm sorry, Charles. Mr. Cartwright isn't here.
I know, but they will be along presently.
They?
Yes, all of them, including the police. Mrs. Rushbridger has been murdered this afternoon. I just heard from Charles and from Hastings.
How was she killed?
She was poisoned, mademoiselle, with benzotine. I wonder if you could make a large pot of tea. I have a feeling these proceedings may last a little time.
Yes.
Slender and in her 40s with her brown hair piled on top of her head, Milray hurries to the kitchen. She takes a deep breath and puts a hand to her mouth as she considers anxiously, then walks down steps to a door. She checks behind her, then goes through the door. She enters a shed where there are many colourful pot plants. She goes to a table where a cloth is covering something and removes it. Beneath the cloth is a large bottle with a red skull and crossbones and the word benzotine on the label. Breathing heavily, she rolls her eyes skywards, hurriedly unscrews the bottle of poison and goes to a stone sink to pour some into a flask. Poirot grabs her hand and she starts.
You may not do that, mademoiselle, for what you are seeking to destroy is evident.
Milray lowers her head. Night at the Crow's Nest.
A crime. To make sense of it for the layman, the judiciary, and even under certain circumstances, believe it or not, for the criminal himself, is the solemn duty of the detective. Therefore, he must construct his case like a house of cards, making absolutely sure that it will resist every attempt to knock it down. So, my friends, mes amis, let us begin from the beginning with the murder of the Reverend Babington. You were right, Mademoiselle Haig, and I was wrong. For once. Both you and Charles Cartwright believed that the Reverend Babington had been murdered. I did not think it was possible to impose on a victim a glass, a particular glass, on a tray full of identical glasses.
Isn't all this rather obvious, Monsieur Poirot?
Well, it may be to you, sir. Madam, not to me. The second crime was announced to me by Charles Cartwright himself in Los Angeles, and I immediately assumed that it was two parts of the same crime. But who could possibly, in light of this, have been there to murder the Reverend Babington? Well, there was Miss Milray. The other was Charles Cartwright. But neither of these two were at the second murder. At the second murder, the main suspect was Carlos Morales, the butler, who seems to have disappeared into thin air. Although there was one guest who attracted more than usual attention to himself, Senor Montoya. When we were presented to one another by Miss Haig, she referred to you as a communist. She said this laughing. I smiled when I heard it, until I noticed a look of overt hostility between you and the Reverend Babington.
We had our ups and downs, Monsieur Perrault. It was mainly about Central America. Nothing serious, though, only arguments. In any case, I'm not actually a communist.
But my regard for personal liberty is such that I don't care what you are, so long as it doesn't culminate in murder, of course. However, your performance at the second party was most unusual, too. You arrived in a disheveled condition, saying you'd had an accident nearby. And then you revealed that this whole scenario was the idea of none other than Dr. Strange. In written instructions to you, when asked to produce them, you said they were destroyed. And you did not convince either by the newspaper clipping which fell from your pocket, the subject of which was, of course, benzotine.
Somebody must have planted it on him. We already told you that.
Yes, very well, Mademoiselle Haig, but by whom? Perhaps Miss Crisp can cast some light on this, or is it all too obvious? Actually, I rather agree with you, Mademoiselle Haig. Everything that Montoya has said and done has been too convenient to be convincing. I think that the more extreme and far-fetched his story is, the more I tend to believe him.
Hastings crosses out a name on his pad.
A really clever criminal would realize that only someone who was present at both murders would be suspect. And now, who was not present at the second murder? Well, there was, of course, Miss Milray, there was Mrs. Babington, there was Charles, and there was last, but not least, myself. Could anybody have given the impression that they were not there while being there? This is where the mysterious butler, Mr. Morales, comes in. He behaved in a very strange way, arriving only minutes before the meal began in order to serve it. The room was dimly lit by candlelight. The butler walked with a pronounced stoop, probably due to some arthritic conditions. And if Rosa, the parlor maid, was intrigued by the butler, she was even more so when he answered the phone and brought a message to Dr. Strange. There was nothing at all amusing about this message. It came from the nurse who was attending Mrs. Rushbridger in the sanatorium. Nothing amusing, and yet Dr. Strange chuckled and kidded with the butler. "You're a steady fellow," he said, "and a first-class butler." It was almost as though they shared a private joke. There was, in fact, a private joke between them. The nature of that private joke, well, when the time came for the butler to disappear, it was not terribly difficult. For one reason, he did not exist. And that was the nature of the surprise which Dr. Strange had promised Mademoiselle Haig. At a given moment, the butler was to straighten his back, take off his disguise, and there in all his glory was to stand...
Charles Cartwright?
The man of a thousand faces.
Well, thank you very much, Perrault, but you're wrong. I don't do that kind of work anymore. I've retired. I couldn't fool anybody.
You think you're fooling me now?
I don't know, and I don't care, Perrault. How can you pretend to know everything that's happened when you weren't even there?
Even a reputable critic has been known to leave after the first act. It's never prevented him from writing a review. Yeah. But there is a small difference. Mm. I returned for the third act to see if my review was watertight.
May I shoot some holes in it?
Yes.
What would have happened had Carlos Morales, the disguise, been discovered earlier?
Oh, well, then you would have had your usual round of applause. You're quite used to that, and general laughter. And you would have been invited to join the dinner party as a guest. Charles, your pride in your work is enough to prevent you allowing that disguise to be penetrated. Dr. Strange knew this, and he chuckled in advance as he imagined the general gasp of surprise. Unfortunately, his gasp of surprise came first when he took a lethal dose of benzotine. After that, everything was as easy as it had been during the death of the Reverend Babington. You switched the glasses in the manner that I demonstrated during my cocktail party. Then you were interviewed briefly by Colonel Matteo. You packed your bags and you disappeared forever through the secret passage in the library.
And Dr. Strange's letter to Ricardo?
Yeah, what about that, Perrault? Did Carlos Morales write that note too?
I'm extremely clever, as you know, but I'm not a clairvoyant. I have no idea how you addressed when you wrote that, nor indeed when you planted that newspaper article in the pocket of Senor Montoya, which was discovered, of course, by Miss Crisp, a woman of insatiable curiosity with a particular fondness for murder. Rosa Sanchez, the parlor maid, was leaving the servants' quarters when she heard a noise and was forced to hide. This noise turned out to be Miss Crisp poking about in the library. Both Mr. Dayton and Senor Montoya claimed that she was behaving in a suspicious manner, obedient, no doubt, to the mongoose instinct for finding out. But let us not be too hard on Miss Crisp. She was the only one, Charles, out of all of us, to really alarm you, because she was the only one to really notice that butler. And there was something about him which was strangely familiar. The voice, she didn't know what it was. But things really came to a head a little later when you visited Angela Stafford's apartment. You were not there to help in solving the murders. That would be too much to ask. You were merely trying to find out if any suspicions had been aroused about yourself. Then something happened which in itself was insignificant, but it became crucial. You offered our friend Miss Crisp a cup of coffee. At that moment, she noticed on your wrist a scar. which was the same scar she had already noticed on the wrist of Carlos Morales.
Charles Glowers.
There are no disguises which are completely impenetrable. She confided this in me after your magnificent performance during my cocktail party. She was terrified that she might be the next victim.
She heaves a sigh.
As defense attorney?
I never played a defense attorney. May I?
May the prosecution have one more moment of your time. You see, Charles, there were three murders, not two.
Three? They all can't be me.
Mrs. Rushbridge?
Charles's expression darkens again.
Charles played yet another one of his galaxy of wonderful characters. An old groundskeeper at the sanatorium. He even tipped a small boy to take a message to the telegraph office. You see, with that instinct which made of him a great actor, he felt curiously that this net was closing around him. He even sent Mrs. Rushbridger a gift of liqueur-filled chocolates. The liqueur in question being, of course, benzotine. The idea was that Mrs. Rushbridger had been killed because she knew too much. In point of fact, the poor darling, she knew nothing at all, was incapable of knowing anything.
Do you rest your case?
My case rests. Thank you.
Charles turns to the group.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Your Honor, I'd like Monsieur Hercule Poirot to take the stand.
Charles walks with a limp.
What do you know about my limp?
Huh? Everybody knows about your limp. It's world famous.
Hastings makes an approving signal.
Monsieur Poirot, what is the motive for the crimes in question?
Oh, yes, you had to kill a Dr. Strange, because he'd been looking after you for a very long time. The official reason given for your premature retirement from the entertainment business was a certain nervous fragility when overworked. This is very far from the truth, of course. The truth is that there were paranoid and psychotic elements in your makeup which could at any moment lead you to unreasonable or even violent behavior. Dr. Strange knew this. He also knew the secret about the scar on your wrist. It was due to an attempt at suicide. I'm worried about M, he wrote. I don't like it.
No, no. M. Margaret. Mateo. Montoya. Milray. Do I have to remind you that my name is Charles Cartwright?
A name given you by a film studio who deemed that Edward W. Muggins was inconsistent with a romantic lead.
And we must be consistent in everything, mustn't we? I'm famous for being consistent. What is the reason for Babington's death? To be consistent in logic?
That is a good question. It is not consistent in the everyday sense of the word, but in the sense of the theater, it would be called, I think, a dress rehearsal.
Charles stares at Poirot.
In fact, Babington happened to die, but it could have been anyone. There was no motive, you understand, apart from a purely technical one. You wanted to see if the poison worked, if it was possible to change the glasses. It was possible. Therefore, it was a wonderful dress rehearsal for the real premiere, which was the necessary death of Dr. Strange. I say necessary because, Charles, he was the only person that could put you away.
This is monstrous!
We will see how monstrous it is. I will ask Miss Milray. Excuse me.
Poirot goes to Milray.
See, Charles, Miss Milray, when she found that orchid spray in the gardener's hut, she suspected that you were the murderer. And when you gave that wonderful performance at my party, Charles, there's one face I wanted to see at the very moment of your death. It was that of Miss Milray. For a moment, she was profoundly shocked and then gave way to the deepest despair. She was torn, you see, between her love for you and her horror of what you had done. I followed her to the garden shed. She tried to destroy the evidence. I'm afraid, Charles, she did not succeed. That evidence is now with the police, as well as your passport, in which is clearly marked the time you returned here in order to kill Dr. Strange. And you returned to Los Angeles by the very next plane in order to break the news to me in a voice of anguish.
A group of men, including Colonel Mateo, enter through the open louvered shutters.
Who are these people? What are you doing in my house? Get out of here! Why do you let these people arrive here? Why are you all staring at me?
Charles! It's a home performance. This is the moment to show dignity. It's a moment to show us what you are made of.
Charles smiles and is wide-eyed.
In the only way, smiling his way to the scaffold.
Yes, if you wish. Except that here there's no scaffold, there's just peace of mind, Charles. And Charles, an infinity of roles to play.
It's a pity you didn't see me as the groundskeeper. I had the audience of one small boy. I used my limp.
Charles grabs Poirot's arm roughly.
Whenever they take me, I'll be out in a year. I'm going to give the greatest performance of my life in that sanatorium. Level-headed, rational, and above all, consistent. Huh?
Good.
Do you think I'm going to struggle? Well, you're wrong. You can put away your straitjackets. You can put away your hypodermic needles. You're not going to need any of them. I'm going to tell you one thing, senors. I may be charming, debonair, and handsome. I may even at times dangerous, but I am not, I repeat, not crazy.
Charles, dressed in a white suit with a short waist-length jacket and black t-shirt, walks out affecting a pronounced limp. Mateo and other officials, including a suited man carrying a medical bag and men in white jackets, separate to let Charles through, then follow him. Poirot mops his brow and watches them go. He inhales deeply and closes his eyes briefly, fighting back tears. They all watch two red and white police cars drive off with their white lights flashing.
I've been a fool, haven't I?
No, mademoiselle, merely young. And youth is often mesmerized by age, as age is mesmerized by youth. Don't you think so, Comrade Montoya?
Please, Monsieur Poirot, I'm not even a socialist. Really.
Who cares what you are?
I'm really sorry about all of this, Ricardo.
So am I.
Ricardo leads Egg off.
Congratulations, Monsieur Poirot. That was a brilliant summation in there. Quite a display. I should think it would make a wonderful conclusion to your book.
My book? Oh, I'd forgotten all about my book. Why not our book?
I beg your pardon.
You know, modern crime is so busy. There's a body falling out of a cupboard one minute, another rising from the lake. You never know where you are. I have no time. Now, if I had a collaborator, someone with a mongoose instinct, what do you think of that?
I think it's a grand idea. Are you serious?
I'm absolutely serious.
He looks into Janet's eyes.
Lord Poirot.
What is the matter now?
It's just occurred to me.
What?
When that poison cocktail was handed round.
Yes.
It could have been me.
I thought of an even worse thought.
What was that?
It could have been me.
Poirot's eyes widen and stare at the thought. The image freezes. ITFC audio description.